Hey folks, so today's episode is on why I closed down Curious Creatures. You might find this episode interesting if you were involved in any of the workshops and things I was running as Curious Creatures, because so far I've said very little about why the business was closed down. And I know that some of you are curious, and I also know that in the absence of any input from me, that can actually look like guilt. This might be of interest to you if you're interested in leadership and communities, and particularly if you're working in a related field. Also, frankly, it's just a bit of a wild tale that you might enjoy. And aside from the purely therapeutic value for me of getting this story out, some of it is also about me exercising my right of reply. That'll make more sense later. And also, I'd like to just put a full stop on the end of the whole thing. The plan for this episode is I'm not going to be going into anyone's personal details. I'd like to give you a little bit of a background on what Curious Creatures was about, particularly since some of you are only aware of this podcast without the rest of the business. I'm going to go through 7 reasons why I shut the business down, finishing with what the sort of the final straw was, and then I'd just like to do a couple of thank yous and apologies. So yeah, first chapter, background. So some of you have been involved with Curious Creatures for its entire sort of, 14 or so years. But yeah, many of you are from overseas and you only know about me or Curious Creatures through this podcast. Funnily enough, this podcast was only ever a little side project I was doing on the side because I liked it, it was fun, it was free. But the actual mainstay of the business was running workshops in communication, consent, relationships, self-development, and that sort of thing. I directly taught about 10 to 20,000 people in in-person workshops. And I was running about 20 separate workshops, give or take. I was also doing writing and public speaking, various other things, and the consent cards. And the consent cards are these quite functional, kind of like sex education on a card, bunch of questions to ask before going into an activity. So all in all, the total reach of the business was well above 1 million people, but it's really hard to put an actual number on that. Because it's a little relevant to how the rest of this story unfolds, I need to be honest and not modest about the impact that the business had. I guess I'd say that I saw that something needed to be done by way of communication and consent. It was a hard thing to address, but I did it well. The workshops I ran improved the lives of thousands of people, and it also noticeably changed the consent culture in Australia and Melbourne in particular, but also around the world. I often had reported from people who have been in this sector for long periods of time that they can notice the difference between the time before I started running the workshops I was running and afterwards, and just, yeah, confirming that the consent culture really improved. So I've saved a lot of people from therapy and saved people from harm, also created a lot of happiness and good things. So in short, I've got a tick in my box for having done something useful with my life. I'm pretty happy about that. So why did I shut it down? 7 reasons. The first reason is gossip, or rather that very human thing of hearing one side of the story and assuming that we've got the entirety of the story. Maybe if I can just give a little example there. There was one day I heard about a couple of pieces of gossip about me. One of the bits of gossip was that, or one of the stories, or one of the rumours, was that I was overly involved in the community that I'd created and the people that I was teaching. And, you know, people were describing that as a little bit suspicious, inappropriate. Was I using it as a pickup space? All those sorts of questions. And then on the same day, I heard about another story about me or another piece of gossip, which was saying that I was too removed from the community and as a result was lacking in transparency, lacking in accountability, lacking in accessibility. And I just love those examples because obviously, I mean, they're both true, but at the same time, they can't both be true. And it's just a really good example of the people telling those stories were absolutely convinced about the truth of what they were saying. They were both concluding that something about me was unsafe as a result of what they believed. They were both utterly convinced, and neither of them had checked in with me about it. But they were happily talking behind my back to other people and causing me harm with those opinions. So, yeah, I like them because they're examples of, well, you know, you just kind of can't win. And they're probably not particularly malicious examples. They're more just examples of people's opinions, which is fine. You get that, and that's not the end of the world. I've got some worse examples coming up, though. Like, for instance, I want to just drop out of the storyline for a second because I think it's useful to explore a little more about gossip as a type of justice system and compare it to other justice systems, because that's what it is. It's a system with which we judge people for their actions, we decide on their guilt, and we implement their punishment, which is generally some form of cancellation of them, their business, their reputation, their social life, etc. I think the justice system we have in Australia is horribly lacking, but perhaps showing signs of improvement as alternative dispute resolution and restorative justice are brought in. But the mainstream of Australia's justice system is the standard adversarial model that most countries use. If you've ever had any involvement in it, then you're probably already aware that as a justice system, it can be as bad or worse than the situation it is in theory trying to correct. It can be a horribly traumatic and unjust process. And yet, at least in the mainstream system, you get to see the charge that's been made against you. You get to make your case in your defence. Your opposition gets to make their case, and judgment is cast by a theoretically neutral and professional judge or independent jury. Your sentence is in theory proportionate to the harm you've caused, and then when it's done, it's done, and you can get on with your life. Gossip performs many of the same functions, but has almost none of the same benefits. You don't get to hear the charge, you don't get a defence, and your punishment may have no reference to anything, nor any chance of review. It seems so innocent when we gossip about people. In fact, it actually often seems like we're doing the right thing. And sometimes we are. But sometimes we're not. We're a part of one of the most unjust forms of a justice system you could have, often with no idea of the harm we ourselves might be causing. I reckon I'm probably one of the most motivated people I know to be good around this stuff, and I still catch myself gossiping unfairly from time to time. As we evolve as a community of 8 billion people, we have to get better at this stuff. Anyway, in the meanwhile, back to the story. Second reason was still relating to gossip and stories about me, but more specifically pertaining to sexual conduct. And I'm gonna notch this up as a form of gendered violence because it's something that happens to almost all male sex educators, and it's something that happens rarely or never to female sex educators. And it's really simple. You just raise questions around someone's sexual conduct. On some level, we're all kind of primed to be a little bit suspicious about men in general and kind of suspicious about male leaders and really suspicious about male sexuality leaders. So I've had plenty of questions asked, raised about my conduct behind my back, unfortunately. The way it unfolds is I know that something's going on because I notice people just start dropping off my radar and start behaving in really strange ways and giving me excuses as to why they can't stay in touch or whatever. And so when I realize that something's going on, the initial response is always this sense of white panic and fear and, oh my God, what if I've done something that I don't remember? Like, what if there's truth in this? Even though I know I haven't intentionally caused harm, what if I inadvertently have? So there's this incredible panic. And it takes an astounding amount of resources to track down where a story is coming from and finding out what it's about. And unfortunately, I've had to do that a few times. And it's not just my time, it's the resources of colleagues, of friends, so certainly of my therapist and my supervisor, and sometimes even lawyers. And the sad thing is, there's almost nothing you can do about it. So, like, for instance, probably one of the worst or the worst example I can think of was an allegation about sexual misconduct. Finally worked out who it was allegedly about, and that person happened to be a really close, dear friend and partner of mine. And they stood up. We held a public meeting when we heard what it was about. They stood up and just made it absolutely clear that there was no truth to the stories and that they also don't consent to their stories being used in any way or being used against me. So yeah, we did that in a public meeting, but it makes absolutely no difference. 10 years later, I still bump into people or I still hear about people who think that that story was a true thing. So the point I'm trying to make here is it is a gendered form of attack, and there is almost nothing you can do about it. Third reason I closed down Curious Creatures might be what you'd describe as my position on gender and gender politics and gender equality. And particularly because most of you listening to this podcast have come to it quite recently, and you've come for the perspectives I've been sharing in what I've been calling the pan-political series. So you know where I'm at with things. You know, I've got some pretty unconventional perspectives at times. Some of them are great, some of them are going to turn out to be not great, but you get the general gist of things. And I mean, I guess there's a very small chance you're sitting there thinking I'm a misogynist. I'm persisting with listening anyway, but you know that I've got a rich and diverse view on gender politics, and I'm not a misogynist. But because I will go into bat for all genders, so obviously women and minority genders, but I will go into bat for men as well. For a lot of people, that alone is evidence of misogyny. So the gossip about me then becomes obviously that I am a misogynist. So that's part of it. The other part of it is that since one of the things I said to my community, to the community that had gathered around the workshops and the work I was doing, at some stage that had become quite a negative environment in terms of how men were being spoken about. And so at some stage I responded to that by saying, well, yeah, no, we're not talking about any genders in a generalized and negative way. So yeah, that was a red flag. But because there are quite a few men within the sexuality and dating communities, and for whom part of their pickup approach, their way to get themselves noticed by women and to get themselves on dates and get themselves into bed, is to constantly criticize men as a way of indicating that they're, you know, well informed. They understand the problem with men and hey, they're one of the good guys. They're on the good team. And another thing they do is constantly make references to their privilege to show how aware and enlightened they are. And the thing is about this approach is that it works. Like, it really works for them. And when I said, no, you can no longer make those generalizations and talk about men like that, I took away one of their main strategies, and frankly, it just really gave them the shits. It also gave them something else to talk about behind my back, and another way to signal to people that they were trying to pick up, which, again, was that thing around, oh my God, that person, Rog, such a misogynist. They won't even let me talk honestly about men, or something like that. Reason number four why I closed down Curious Creatures. You might describe it as the collection of haters, or just like motivated gossipers. So in the business I was in, there's a lot of ways to annoy people, even with the best of intentions, doing my very best job and doing what I think needs to be done in the world. It's impossible not to annoy some people from time to time. So I'll give you some examples. There would be people who applied to be participants in workshops that I didn't accept their application for some reason, or people that were a part of the community who for some reason I rejected. And it's worth noting that anyone you remove from a community is very understandably going to be very angry about that situation, and they're very unlikely to agree. So they become very motivated dislikers. Next category of people are basically anyone who didn't quite like the way I was doing things. And even if that only works out to be like, you know, a half of 1%, that's a lot of people out of the 10 or 20,000 people that I taught directly. And if I'm being honest, I reckon that half of 1% would be a very small number, given that we're talking about relationships and sexuality and self-worth and all of the other things that go along with those topics. Other people who became disenfranchised would be people who could no longer participate in the community because of relationship issues with someone else in the community, or maybe even a relationship or a friendship issue with me. So all of these things, when you do the maths, resulted in certainly hundreds, or maybe even thousands of people who on some level had some reason to be disgruntled with me or what I was doing. And if they can no longer participate in the community, then they have nothing to lose but a lot to gain from trashing me behind my back. Like gossiping with other people actually becomes a way to bond with those people and increase their sense of connection. So I get to build community, but at my own expense. It's also only a matter of time before people in that situation who on some level can no longer participate in what I'm doing realize that just literally making stuff up is advantageous for them. And it means because of the way social dynamics play out, there's almost no chance they're going to be held to account for what they say, particularly when you bear in mind the use of the double bind, which I'll tell you about in a moment. So that was... yeah, that was reason number four. Just a gradual accumulation of more and more disgruntled people, even with the best of intentions. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so. and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me. Reason number 5 why I quit Curious Creatures is what I'm going to refer to as the double bind, borrowing from psychology a little bit here. So a double bind is when you're in a situation where you have to sort of choose between two options, or you have to choose between a bunch of options, none of which are the option you'd like to go with, none of which are good options for whatever reason. But there's something about the way things are structured or set up, which means that you don't have the option of doing what you would like to do. So classic examples is when a parent, say, like manipulates a child, or a partner manipulates a partner by saying something like, well, if you love me, then you'll do this for me, blah, 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 blah. So that's a really simple double bind. There's lots of more complicated ones. The way that double binds have been used against me is something like this. Someone will come up to you at a party or event or a social thing or whatever else and say something to you like, hey, you got a minute? To which you say, yep. They say, I've got to talk to you about something important. Have you really got a minute? And you're like, oh, this sounds serious. Yeah, sure, I'm here. What did you want to talk about? And they say, it's about a safety issue. It's about something which is of concern. It's about an important thing. And I need to know that I can trust you and I have your confidence before I tell you. Because otherwise, you know, my safety and the safety of other people is at risk. And at this stage, you're absolutely compelled by what's about to come out. And so you say, yeah, absolutely, of course you can trust me. And then they say, it's about Rog. I need to know that I can absolutely 100% trust you before I tell you what I need to tell you. To which you say, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's a safety issue and it concerns Rog, then that concerns me, that concerns everyone. This is really important. And at that point in time, you've absolutely fallen for the double bind, because the other person is now free to tell you basically anything they want about me, in this case. And you are denied your right to check that story out and get the other side of the story. If you realize the situation you're in, and you realize that you do want the rest of the story, you're now running the risk of being seen as being associated with a perpetrator or whatever they told you about me, or being seen to be on the bad side or failing to be on the good side. And you're running the risk of social isolation and exclusion yourself, and then having stories and rumors told about you, because it's clear that that's how things work. So it's an extremely difficult double bind to get out of. And even if you don't take the story too seriously, even if you've got the wherewithal to go, well, you know, something about that story just sounded a little weird, and the way it was just made so clear that I was not allowed to check out the other side of the story, that sounds pretty weird, you're still not going to forget it. And it's still going to make it hard for you to be my friend, to participate in my workshops, to be around me, or to be seen to be a supporter. So things get really complicated. So that double bind has been used against me by a couple of people in particular, but it's just a general strategy that gets used, and it's a really difficult one, because once in a blue moon, there really is a genuine actual safety concern at play, but that mechanism just gets used and misused and abused so much. Reason number 6 why I finished Curious Creatures is the pressure put on friends and lovers and the people around me. So, like, it's one thing for me to say, well, I've chosen to do this work in what is a pretty murky deep end of the pool, and that's going to put me in the public eye a little bit, but that's okay. It's my mission. I get paid for it. I've opted in and I've chosen this. So it's one thing for me to be able to do that. But one of the tricky things is that the people around me wind up being put in some similarly difficult spots and put under some pressure. Essentially, they get forced to choose as to whether they want to be seen to be aligned with me or aligned with the side of good, you know, as per the double bind I just described to you. And it's just a really difficult spot for people to have to sort of choose between, are they going to hang around with me and my events and the time they spend with me or other people? And sometimes I win that situation and sometimes I lose. So that's really difficult when people disappear from my radar for no apparent reason. It's also really difficult for the people around me because even if they stick around, they're going to have moments of confusion of just going, what if the stories they've heard are true? And then another little element of this is just the people around me, my supports, my friends, dealing with me when I'm in a stressed situation, and it's the same old story over and over again, because honestly, this stuff's just been recurring for 12 or 14 years. So boring. And then lastly, reason number 7 for me closing down the business was the additional pressure that all of this stuff that I've just been describing to you, gossip and rumors, all of the pressure that that puts on a business that relies absolutely on trust and safety. I mean, I'm running workshops on sexuality and relationships and self-development, and I'm looking at this from my perspective as a consumer. If I don't trust the facilitator of spaces like that, I'm not going to be going anywhere near it. And if I've heard a bunch of stories about a person, even if I don't know if they're true or not, it's just going to add this element of mistrust. And at times where waves of gossip and rumors and stories were circulating about me, I absolutely noticed a substantial impact on my business, just purely and simply the number of people that would book into workshops. Very, very measurable and negative impact on the survivability and profitability of the business. After each of those waves, I would build the business back up again, and then there'd be another wave of it. So it was a bit repetitious. Okay, so there are the 7 reasons. From here, I'd like to talk about what exactly unfolded, and then, a couple of other points. So how exactly it unfolded was that I'd just been through another crippling round of rumors, all of which amounted to nothing. And I know it's easy for me to say that, but from my perspective, on this occasion, I'd assembled an accountability circle. I had my supervisor involved. I had some friends involved, all with access to emails and communications, chatting with people in an unfettered way to see if there was any truth in what was sounding like some really quite concerning and disturbing accusations. And after 2 months of really difficult time for me and 2 weeks of pretty hard work from a group of 8 people who were set up as my accountability circle, we all concluded that no, there was no substance to any of what we'd heard in this latest round of rumors and stories. We were all just celebrating that fact, and in one final blow, someone who I had cared for financially and physically and supported them in business and supported them in employment and supported them in health and in many other ways, said a bunch of things about me in ways that would have reached an audience of thousands of my people. I knew the things that they were saying were not true. I knew that they were going to reflect badly on me. I knew that I would never get the opportunity to state my side of the story. And I knew that this pattern was just going to go on forever. So since I happened to be gathered with my support group, my accountability circle at the time, I got them to put me on suicide watch. The next day, I started cancelling my workshops, and I set about preparing for sale a portion of the business that I thought could stand on its own feet and that I thought had value both to me in terms of it was a useful contribution to the world and also others to the world. What followed was probably the worst year of my life, but hey, it's done now. Next chapter, the ending and the hilarious thing. So it's taken about 2 years since that wave of events that I was telling you about. And I guess the hilarious thing is that I finally achieved a state of mind where I'm not particularly bothered by what people think about me anymore. And that was the inner work that was waiting for me to wrap my head around. By which I mean, I've finally gotten to a point that I couldn't get to when I was in the middle of it all. But it's a state of mind where I just think to myself that if people want to behave like that and jump to conclusions and fail to get all sides of the story, and if that means that they wind up moving away from me, that's not actually a bad outcome for me. It's actually a kind of a great outcome. So all of this talk that I've been referring to a little in this episode, and if you've been involved in Curious Creatures, you might have heard me say this from time to time, about wishing that people would judge me based on their experience of me, rather than what someone else had said about me. I mean, that was just my ongoing issue that I was struggling with around, the pain of the situation. I woke up one day not long ago from when I'm recording this, and thanks to the very focused help of a few very important people around me, and realized that my life is rich and overflowing with exactly, precisely that type of person, the type of person who judges me based on their experience of me, despite the fact that they might have heard all sorts of colorful, nasty stories about me. And in addition to that, the people who tend to get off on gossip and politics and all those sort of schoolyard games, they're nowhere to be seen in my life these days. It's great. So having done this bit of inner work and had that realization, I don't think that would necessarily mean that Curious Creatures was still a sustainable business for me to run. Because of just the constant trauma and churn on the people around me who never signed up for that. That's probably all still going to be too much, even with this realization that I've had. So I think even if I'd had better leadership skills and better personal skills and self-awareness, it's hard for me to say whether I could have gotten through it and whether Curious Creatures would still exist. But I didn't. And so I didn't, and I'm not even entirely sure if I'm sad about that. I am proud of what I've achieved, and I have loved doing it, outside of the challenges I've been speaking about in this episode. And to the best of my knowledge, I haven't done anything out of all of the stories I've heard and all of the stories I've looked into and researched or had other people look into on my behalf. I've yet to find anything that would warrant me needing to step out of the gig and shutting down the whole operation. And to be clear, I am not claiming perfection. I am not claiming that I have a blemish-free life. I am not claiming perfection in my personal world. I'm not claiming perfection in my professional world. But as far as things go in terms of crimes against humanity or whatever. Sorry, I shouldn't be joking about this. In terms of harm caused by me to other people, to the best of my knowledge, I am yet to find anything that seems to be remotely of a level to justify closing down and ending the good that I was doing in the world. But hey, maybe you think otherwise. Maybe you are delighted that someone you're sure is the bad man has been taken out of action, and maybe you're thinking that the world is a better and safer place now. Good for you. I don't care. I'm moving on, and wow, I love my friends. Oh, And if you're wondering why it's taken this long to tell the story, someone who knew I had an intention of telling my audience at some stage why the business came to an end, and that thought that I was going to name them, and also thought that my side of the story would reflect badly on them, they actually filed a legal proceeding that was all about taking away my right to talk. So essentially, it was just a gag order. I spent 12 months and about $20,000 fighting that, and for better or worse, it's done. So I'm now free to tell the story I just told, and now I'm free to shut down the last of the business and move on. If, in listening to this, you realize that you're somehow involved, and I mean particularly at the level of hearing one side of the story and possibly believing that one side of the story and maybe even sharing that one side of the story, and if you're realizing that you'd like to take in a different approach now that you've had a bit of a think about the impact of gossip and the exactly how nasty the double bind is, then get in touch. You know how to do so if you've been around long enough to have heard those stories. I am up for making peace if peace is possible. And also, please note that I'm doing this in an extremely transparent way. I'm doing the opposite of asking you to keep a secret, since this podcast episode can be shared with anyone. I ain't hiding behind anything. So if you need to go back and double-check with someone about anything you've heard about me, and that person again demands secrecy, and that you can't get my side of the story, like, do whatever you want, you do you. But if you fall for the double bind, it's going to bite you sooner or later. Like, it's only a matter of time before that strategy is used against you. So make your choices wisely. Alrighty, and I'd like to finish with some apologies and then some thank yous. By way of apologies, I'd just like to apologize to anyone who didn't have a perfect experience in the community that sprung up around my work and where we weren't able to get things resolved in a way that you wanted. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to anyone that I didn't let in, by which I'm referring to the application process that we put in place at a certain point in time when we realized that the work we were doing, the work I was doing, was not safe or suitable for everyone, or vice versa. So even though I stand by that, I'm still really sorry to anyone I didn't let in. There's nothing about that that's fun. Also, to anyone that was a part of the community, but that I or we had to remove for some reason, I am so sorry. I have been removed from communities myself. It is a horrible thing to have happen, and even if I stand by the reasons for your removal, please understand that it gave me no joy. It gives me no joy now. I am so sorry. To anyone that had a personal relationship with me, so friends, colleagues, partners, etc., and where that relationship became complicated because of the role I was playing in the community, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to both of us. And I'm also sorry to anyone that I've marginalised with my humour. I used to use humour a lot in my workshops. It was a really great way to normalise and make easy, otherwise difficult topics. But I didn't always get that 100% right. And when you're in a group and something important to you is joked about, that's incredibly unpleasant. So I did my best to avoid that, but there's no chance I got that right 100% of the time. So sorry if that applies to you. Now, a couple of thank yous. It might actually sound like a bit of a contrast compared to what I've been talking about in this episode, but so many people in the community understood the double bind when it was presented to them for what it was, and they pushed back upon it. And so many people refused to participate in gossip and let gossipers know in no uncertain terms that they did not support the harm that that person was causing to me and the community. You people are brilliant. It's an absolute delight serving you. and thank you for your support, and thank you for spotting those tactics for what they were. I'd like to thank the various people that have been either supports or people in my accountability network. When it's sounded like there was something that I or we needed to be genuinely concerned about, and you've helped to look into those things and hold me to account as required, I want to really thank you for doing that. It's a difficult role to play. It takes a lot of skill and courage. I want to thank my friends and partners for holding me through some pretty challenging times. I want to thank everyone in the community who saw the opportunity that was there and the importance of it and went into defense for it as required. I want to thank my absolutely incredible staff for everything and so much support and assistance and incredible work, and particularly during those wildly difficult times. I know that all the stuff that I've been talking about in this episode had big impacts and unfair impacts on you also. And I want to thank anyone ever that's judged me based on their experience of me rather than what someone else might have said, whether that's good or bad. I say thank you. It's great to walk the earth with you. Thanks for listening, friends. Bye for now. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which in short is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books or for videos or for workshops or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book or a workshop or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon if you're in a position to do so and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you. And I appreciate having you on this ride with me.